Well, hi, everybody. It's Reanimated. This is the podcast about all things zombie, undead, and witchy, as it turns out. And my name is Stuart, and one of your hosts. I'm in California. Joining me from New York is H.A. Conrad.
Hello.
Hello. We are finishing up today the last two episodes of the first season of The Mayfair Witches on AMC Plus-ish. And we have a little bit of news, but not much. The first one of which was a kind of like a trailer and hype reel that dropped for a Filipino film starring an MMA fighter. There's been a few of these going around lately, haven't there?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't follow MMA, so I don't know how famous this guy is. But frankly, it looks better than some of the other versions of this that have been out there. So this movie's called Day Zero. H.A., what did you think of the trailer?
I mean, it's what I would expect, honestly. It's very much focused on this particular fighter, Brandon Vera, or Vera. He's got like that kind of, they're really like kind of going through like the fast edits, and like there's choreography in there that's just incredibly fast moving. I don't know. It's like standard sort of action zombie fare. So I think as far as what I can see, sure, it looks okay, but it doesn't, you know, there's nothing. These are the best shots. It probably has to have a little bit more, but I think that they're trying to get like that sort of high impact trailer out there, which makes sense. And they're trying to show him off clearly. So I think it's probably going to be cool to watch, but I don't know how much substance there is to this. So we'll have to see. But again, that may be the point, right? For a lot of these, it's just to give somebody a vehicle to look really cool killing zombies, or to look cool being the hero. And I think at the very least, the shots look great, and the choreography looks great. He looks good.
Yeah.
So the limited amount that you see in this, like, I think it's great, but it's just sort of like it was cut so quickly together that it's a little hard to get what it will actually be like, right?
I mean, they've got the kind of always laughable guy wrestling with zombies approach,
exactly.
It depends on how they're doing it. But yeah, I think it looks kind of interesting because there's a big prison element to this too. And there's going to be some like tight quarters. It could be good, but it's going to need more than wrestling.
Yeah. And to be clear, he looks great. So there's no slam on him. I mean, he looks fantastic. He looks like he does what he's supposed to be, ostensibly like a special forces guy that was in prison. So that's in part why I think he supposedly has a special set of skills allowing him to get through to the zombie apocalypse. So his choreography looks amazing, and there's no doubt he is fit. So we shall see what happens. But it's a little, I mean, I got a sense like that, you know, he's trying to get out and survive this thing. I don't totally have a full handle on what the plot is, other than that he was in prison and getting out somehow in a zombie apocalypse. So
yeah, there's he's in prison, he gets out, there's a girl, there's a cute lady.
Maybe a kid. Family. I don't know.
Yeah.
People still on the way.
So that'll be, you know, I don't know. I feel like it might be worth a look.
Oh, definitely. But you know.
So that's Day Zero. And that's already streaming. You can rent it on like Google or YouTube or whatever. The other pieces of news that dropped this week were Fear the Walking Dead related, because that season is going on. And as much as they're trying to like get me in, I feel like somebody's trying to get, every time I try to get out, they keep pulling me back in, you know, but I'm also not at all interested. I don't care. The only reason I would care about these headlines that are dropping from Fear the Walking Dead is if it spoils the meta for the other shows. So the headline this last week was Fear the Walking Dead may have cured zombie bites at last. There's something to do with Padre. There's been a big time jump in Fear the Walking Dead apparently too. And I wasn't aware that they were behind the timeline of the Prime show. I kind of thought that they had kept them contemporary.
So did I.
But they've apparently jumped 7 years in Fear of the Walking Dead, and they are working on a zombie cure. And the funniest part of this is they're working on it on, it's not funny, but Dwight and Sherry's child is like the subject of this experiment. So new character.
I saw this headline and then I did not regret that we haven't seen this thing. And
that's kind of what I mean. It's like, it's not
and
tempting.
Then I think you and I have talked about this before. It's just sort of like, okay, you literally used atomic to like just scorch Earth, like you destroyed this whole world basically. And I guess some of the premise of this quote-unquote cure is radiation and all these other things. Well, the thing about that though is that depending on how you use it, it can sterilize little kids, you know. So you're like, if you do use this as a cure, you're also talking about you know, depending on how you use it, whatever, you're basically talking about killing off the species or potentially doing so because they won't be able to propagate. So there's a lot of problems with that particular theory, depending on where they're going with it. But there already were because they have had fallout in this thing. So radiation, if this is what they're going for, one would guess that all of them have kind of been exposed at this point, right? So
no, because that office building where Strand set up was like a no radiation area, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Like a little quarter mile of all good. Either way, dumb. And it just underscores to me how little I care about the story that they're putting together. As long as it doesn't mess up Daryl's trip to France.
Daryl's French European adventure. We do not want to get in the way of.
He's got to get to the top of the Eiffel Tower and eat a baguette and all the fun things that you do when in France.
He's going to I can't believe there are still croissants here.
Oh, mon Dieu. However, we're not going to get to go to France with Daryl for a while because the Dead Isle, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Is starting in like 3 weeks. That one's coming out Negan and Maggie, and more trailers keep dropping for that show too. And I am.
Do you have I have this idea that Negan and Maggie and Daryl all end up in Paris wearing berets.
I haven't really gone there, but
I'm really excited about this potential.
I could see it.
Reunion. But no. And I'm excited to watch Dead Isle, obviously, but I just wish Fear the Walking Dead would just stop, but you know.
They are stopping. This is their last season.
I know, but just stop.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so I'm willing to put this down. I'm not gonna, you know, keep going on about this, but I just, this particular article drove me insane for so many reasons. But this, again, it's not anything new that we haven't talked about in terms of like what they did with this world and how very far off the rails they went and just didn't make it better. So it's really a little depressing sometimes. But
I'm curious why this article from Forbes that we are looking at today is by Paul Tassi. And not by Eric Kane. I wonder if Eric Kane's finally just given up on Fear the Walking Dead.
I feel like Eric Kane's done. but yeah.
He can't even anymore.
But are you ready to wrap up our review of Mayfair Witches?
Yeah. Yes, I am. What a ride it's been. I'm sorry. I'm just looking up to see if he is still watching it. He has a review from May 26th, which is just 2 days ago. And the headline of that review, H.A., Fear the Walking Dead's Padre villain reveal is astonishingly stupid. So he's still watching it and he still hates
watching it. And he's still miserable. So
now they have two guys over there watching the show that is objectively bad. Mm. Okay, sorry. Moving on to Mayfair Witches. Mayfair Witches, final two episodes of the season entitled Tessa and What Rough Beast. Love me a little William Blake reference. I think show writers also seem to like William Blake. Tessa and What Rough Beast are both directed by Alexis Ostrander, and they are written by the showrunner Esta Spalding. Tessa having another writer, Sarah Cornwell, joining Esta on this one. So this first episode, Tessa. Yeah. Another show, another Scotland cold open, except this is not old-timey Scotland. Old-timey Scotland, I think, is over. This is Cyprian is trapped inside, like, this mind game.
A memory or something of Suzanne. And Lasher basically trapped him in there.
Well, that's what we eventually find out throughout this episode. But at the beginning, he's just like, how do I get out of here? Help. It's like daylight. Like, clearly, he's just been in there overnight and is yeah, but there are no people around. It's weird. Obviously, something is weird.
Yeah. And he's eventually noticed by the little sister. Is that
eventually? Right? Yeah. Later on in the episode, he's what he does is he hears. I don't know if is that in this episode or the next one. Well, he gets out of this pocket dimension or whatever it is eventually. But he first hears Arjuna, which is the name of the doctor who I think was unnamed in the first couple episodes she was in. Suddenly she's named Arjuna, which I associate with a male name because of the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe that's just me. But what does it matter? Arjuna is a really cool name. It used to be my AOL online login, Arjuna 007. I don't know if you ever looked me up on a chat room, HA, in the 90s.
I did not.
Well, you probably for the best, frankly. I didn't have a lot of interesting things to say back then. Not like now. But Arjuna is like able to reach him by putting a piece of cloth over her head and like whispering to him, like, look for the necklace. It's gone here. You have to find it there. So that gives him his guidance. And then, Suzanne's sister eventually comes up to him and is like, hey, my sister wants to talk to you.
Yep.
So that's kind of ultimately leading him into a trap. Yeah.
Yeah. And he ultimately goes and talks to what he thinks is Suzanne, and it's not, and kind of like realizes that this is all like either a construct or something, and has to get out through extreme measures. Which is basically a pretty extreme measure to get his mind out of there, to kill himself to get out.
Yeah, he doesn't find the necklace. That's not the answer. Thanks, Arjuna. The answer was to kill himself.
I don't think she says that. I think she says basically the necklace isn't here. You got to find your own way out.
I thought you said find the necklace, but
no.
Because then he sees Suzanne and she's got the necklace on. He's like, oh, you've got the necklace. Because he was trying to find it on the body of the witch hunter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fair, fair.
But I think he was trying to find it in there, but it turns out not to be the answer. The answer was kill yourself.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It's pretty big risk.
Because that's funny. It's weird because that's exactly what Lasher's asking him. He's like, if you die in here, will you die out there?
Yeah.
And he's like threatening him with it. And then he's like, oh, you know, once Lasher leaves and the lights go out, he's like, you know what I'm going to do?
I'm going to kill myself.
Just like, going to kill myself.
And also just should say, look, this is, you know, could be triggering for some people anyway, just putting that out there. It's a little disturbing.
But he makes up a little potion.
Yep.
Suzanne's stuff.
Henbane or something.
Henbane. Yeah. Was that like Chekhov's henbane? Didn't they have that in one of the earlier episodes where Suzanne was fixing up Aoife or something like that?
Yep. It's also, you know, it's belladonna essentially, cause like in big doses it can cause death. So, anyway, that is
anyway
the limit
indeed.
That's the limit of my I don't even know what you call it, root folklore information. I don't know.
You heard it here, folks. H.A. Conrad, not a witch, because she doesn't know enough about henbane.
Don't know enough about it.
Rowan, meanwhile, in the A plot, we could call it, is walking around in New Orleans in her cutoff jeans at night, and then feels a little funny. And she sits down on a park bench, and then we see for the first time since the ceremony that she still has the medical sight. She had said to Dolly Jean that she had it before, but we didn't see it from our perspective, so she could have been, you know, lying. But in this scene, she feels her stomach, and then she's like, oh, there's my fertilized egg or whatever, like rolling around inside me.
Mm.
I don't know. Did you have any kind of reaction to the fact that she does still have the sight? Does that mean anything to you?
Not, I still didn't, based on what's going on with Tessa, I think, you know, my guess and, you know, I've read the book, so it's not like, and this whole plot about the transference wasn't in the original books, but like, I just did not feel as if Lasher had actually transferred because he is not coming to Tessa's aid. So I just didn't think he had given up on Rowan at this point. And, it felt like, you know, if you've read the books, this particular issue, the pregnancy is a big piece. It's a big plot point. So I just felt like the sight might be indicative that he's still around with her, but also that she's still very witchy, no matter what the other said about her losing something in that particular ceremony. But I also think, to me, it's like he hadn't left her.
She is extremely witchy. This is the witchiest we get to see her in this episode, I think. It's kind of badass. She has her like biggest badass moments in this episode, and I was pretty psyched about it. So she tries to call Cyprian. He's not answering because he is locked in a dream world. And she actually calls out. She doesn't call Lasher by name. She doesn't say the demonic words, because that's the theme of this episode, is her not saying that. But she's like, "Did you do this?" You know, to no one in the park. And nobody answers, and he doesn't show up to gloat or be weird. So she's just like, okay, well. And then we cut to the warehouse where Tessa is being held, and the members of the cabal holding her consist of a paltry 4 people.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, actually it's 5 people. There's Arlo. It's finally ditched his blazer and is just very sweaty in his shirt sleeves. There's Keith, who is left alone with the prisoner way too often. And then there's the Diane from The Walking Dead, whose name I don't know on the show. Did you know her name?
I don't remember
her
name.
Is it Gladys, maybe, or something like that?
I don't know.
And then there's 3 other dudes. One of them really likes to burn witches with thermite. And then there's 2 red shirts. We have these scenes. Any impressions from the stuff that's going on in the warehouse?
Well, overall, I felt like the plot of this was a little bit disjointed and not...
Of the warehouse stuff or all of it?
All of it. But especially like the storytelling, I felt like... And this is the thing. We're going into the last 2 episodes, so I thought that it would be a little bit tighter, maybe wrap up a little bit nicer somehow or a little bit more cleanly. And it didn't. So I was a little disappointed about that. But there's a lot of like back and forth between like the warehouse and like we got to find Tessa. And, you know, just sort of to me, very slow moving things that just didn't really I found to be a little clunky. But especially with these scenes, like, OK, so you've got this group of people. Apparently they've been doing this to different women for a while. They seem honestly particularly slow to get to business, given that supposedly they've been doing this for a while.
I didn't get the impression that they'd really done this to other witches before. I felt like they were making it up as they went along.
Well, isn't this that whole plot point, is that they'd been burning witches? And
there was like a very slight mention of burned women. Yes. And then he's doing one of his sermons about like a woman who died in a fire. But he kind of made it sound like it was self-inflicted. But maybe that was the whole point.
There's a whole plot point that they are finding these women that have been bound and burned all over the place. So.
But then it doesn't feel, to me, it doesn't feel like these guys have been doing that, because they don't really know what they're doing and they're doing it all
half-assed. Regardless, it just feels like their whole idea is that they're going to threaten her so that she does something witchy that they can get on film, and then they'll prove that she's
witchy. Don't even have a camera going, if I feel like. Right. Did they have a camera set up at any time?
But not like, I think it was like an iPhone. Was that what they were
maybe
planning?
Maybe it was something small, but yeah, it's like, he's also talking about like, it's going to be threat of death, not we're going to kill her. Of course, they do eventually go to burn her because she doesn't give up the Mayfairs, but it feels like what they want is proof,
right? And there's no, I mean, look, she's not stupid. There's no way for her to get out of this alive, basically. Like, she knows that. So,
well, she doesn't stop her from trying. She glamours the hell out of Keith again and again.
She does. And it almost works, but it's just not enough. And there's too many people involved. So she's not going to be able to.
Yeah. To she can only do that. It on one person at a time. Right. And even though Keith is stupidly left alone with her for way too many times. And he gives her like so many chances to glamour him.
I know.
It's kind of funny.
That's my point. That's my point. It's like, this just feels very slow moving, and they know that she's capable of something. They just don't know what. And so for them to be leaving her alone, and it just seems a little silly to me, and not really, it doesn't really make sense. And even their whole point of what they're trying to do here doesn't completely make sense in terms of, like, if they are really trying to prove that these people are evil or whatever. I mean, and I guess that's sort of the ham-fisted way of them showing, oh, but they are really the evil ones. This is just seems somewhat ridiculous. And, you know, we kind of go through this tension here in the warehouse, which is, again, it's like, oh, we got to send them out to get the thermite. Oh, we're going to very slowly just yell at you for a while and hang you up on this thing. You know, like the slow moving way in which they're sort of dealing with this. And you could have handled this in a lot of ways. And one of them would be, as you said, like, maybe they hadn't done this before. Maybe having a little bit more dialogue showing that some of them are conflicted about this might have made more sense, instead of, because if they're all kind of on board and egging each other on, there's a good way to show that. This didn't seem to do that to me. It just seemed very bad. It seemed like very poor and weak dialogue. And then, you know, we flip from this to Rowan and Tessa's mom and Josephine and all these people talking about how to find her. And that whole thing seemed incredibly, like, there's a lot of like back and forth with them about, oh, well, I thought you were out of this family. And it's like,
I like those scenes. I mean, those ones were, because there were hints of that earlier on. But when Rowan shows up at Alicia's house and Alicia's hungover and is kind of just a waste, just a mess. And it doesn't take long before people are like, why are you even here? Weren't you trying to get out of this family as fast as you could? And I'm like, dude, she was abducted basically and never told that you were her family. So you cannot give her a hard time. I mean, granted, they're being written that way to make them seem unreasonable. Right. Alicia even blames her for what happened to Tessa, even though Rowan's like, I told her not to mess with those guys.
Right. But also, I don't really feel like she, not that she wouldn't try to help, but I don't really feel like they built enough of the relationship with Rowan and Tessa to really, you know, I don't know. This whole thing just felt really forced.
AJ, they've had two conversations. Okay. In TV, that's exactly. Like best friends. That's best friends.
That's what I'm saying. And it just felt very forced. And this
whole thing, a lot of plots they're trying to get through, especially in this episode between Warehouse, Rowan and Sip. That's three parallel plots that they're trying to do in 45 minutes. So that is not easy to do. So yeah, things are going to get lost in the cracks for sure. And they do. But I did it. I think of the three storylines, I liked the best, the one with Rowan being told that she was, doesn't belong there and she should get out of the way. But Tessa glamoring Keith is always fun. And I'll always make the time to watch some scenes of that.
Yeah. And then we've also got the Sip/Talamasca plot, which that is kind of interesting because
he doesn't show up out of the dream until the next episode, so that's when the Talamasca stuff really starts to go off the rails.
Yeah,
but in this one, I wasn't really sure what the Mayfair family was going to do when they get to this warehouse. Rowan volunteers to use her blood to find her mother's heart through this guy, Alonzo. Like they introduced new characters in this episode. It was a lot going on, right? But they're scrying for the location of her mother's heart. That's where they think Tessa's going to be held. Mm-hmm. It turns out, I think, not to be the location, because there's like some weird thing where she doesn't follow the GPS to the location she's supposed to. I don't know. It's weird. But the Mayfair women all left before her. And none of them show up. Cortland is the one who eventually in the next episode finds Rowan. You never see what happens to this little strike team of Mayfair ladies.
No, they're hopefully not anywhere to be found.
I'm not sure what they were going to do. Maybe some of them have like real powers that could weigh in something like this, but it didn't seem like, we haven't seen them, I guess. and Dolly Jean doesn't go with, so I don't know what her power is.
I don't know, but we do know that she knows that Rowan is pregnant and tells Corlys.
Yeah, and she just, maybe that's one of her things. I don't know. It seems very Rowan-esque that she can look at someone and tell that they're pregnant when they're, you know, they just got pregnant, or they just realized they were pregnant like that night. But yeah, so that's curious. This so Tessa, the showdown with Tessa, though, Rowan is the only person who arrives at the warehouse, and she goes inside because she hears a scream, because they're about to set her on fire, and they are literally about to set her on fire when the Bubba who loves thermite keels over, and you're like, okay, I know what's going on. And then Arlo keels over, and then you see Rowan doing her hero walk through the warehouse.
Yep.
What did you did? I mean, it sounds like you weren't really a huge fan of this episode in general, but did you like this scene?
I mean, I thought it was fine, except that Rowan is pretty quick in what she does, and I just didn't buy that people would be like, she's pretty fast. I mean, all she has to do is cause a stroke in somebody's head. She's done it before. It doesn't seem to take a lot of time. And again, it felt like convenient that somebody sort of left standing long enough to shoot a weapon. So I just didn't, you know, like it. I did like it as a show of her power and how much her power has grown, and that she absolutely, where she has shown some hesitancy or even regret using it, even when she uses it in anger, there is no question here that like this is where she's like, nope, you are going to get taken out. Yeah. And we, even when she, that, you know, the doctor that, you know, she killed back in on the West Coast and who is being disgusting and whatever, she even felt like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? I'm just like this creature and I just don't know what's happening. And we saw reluctance from her in terms of really, in, even with her aunt, Carlotta, it like that was very much, you know, Carlotta was definitely pushing her into that particular situation because she was like basically saying all these things and was the cause of a lot of the pain in Rowan's life, and also is telling her she should kill herself. And even then, Rowan was still like hesitant about it. There is no hesitance here, not one bit. So I liked that. I thought that that was pretty well done. But I just didn't really, again, the sort of like, she has this much power, but then leaves somebody kind of standing it long enough to get shot off didn't feel real to me. But maybe
it seems to take her a long time to put Arlo down for whatever reason.
Yeah.
The first guy keels over before she's even on screen.
Right.
Like he's fast. Dead. Arlo is screaming for a while and holding his head because Chris Coy, you can't just let him keel over dead. You got to give him a nice send off scene. So he's got to do some acting, you know, he's got to do some work, just probably in his contract. So he can't die that fast. And that does give Diane from The Walking Dead, maybe Gladys, time to pick up his gun and shoot Rowan, actually, in the shoulder. And then they say she gets Tess off the pyre there, and she kills Gladys with one glance, of course. Or Diane or whoever that lady is. And she had a backstory, which I thought was, it was nice that they gave Diane a little time to shoot down Tessa. For being like, I didn't do anything to you. She's like, well, your family put me out of work and I lost my health insurance and my daughter died of cancer and it's your fault. I'm like, well, yep. Okay, she's got a point there. Tessa, you might not make it out of this one. But then they're like stumbling away from the pyre when Keith suddenly shows up with the gun all of a sudden, gets a shot off, yells an epithet, and then runs away. Another guy has also put down the tiki torch, which is actually what set the fire in the first place, but he did it like almost as an accident. He's like, I didn't want anything to do with this, and he runs away. I don't think that guy dies. Unless I missed his, maybe she just like, you know, killed him with a glance or something. But I think one of them got away. But Keith definitely runs out of the warehouse after shooting Tessa in the neck. She dies in front of Rowan. Rowan is very mad and starts to scream the demonic words. And this is a thing that is happening in this episode, and it is a big deal because was it just Cortland who was encouraging her to say the words. Maybe it was Dolly Jean also. They're like, call to her. Oh, Alicia was also Tessa's mom. They were like, you probably still have him. You can save Tessa if you use the words. And she's like, I'm not going to do that. I will not use the words. But when Tessa dies in her arms, she does yell the Latin. And I think that's where the episode ends.
Dangerous Latin words.
Watch out for that Latin.
With Tessa's death, that just puts her over the edge. So that brings us to the next episode.
It's a real shame. Tessa seemed like a good kid.
We should also say we also missed the, we have to talk about the sip scene with Albrecht. Which
scene with Albrecht?
Yeah, the Talmaska supervisor guy who's in cahoots with Cortland.
That storyline begins in episode 8. What Rough Beast, I believe.
No, I think he does it here because Cortland is, we find out that Cortland's in cahoots because he calls him to basically.
Yes, you're right. No, they start driving off together, but we don't find out that this shady dude, I think his name was Alan. Is it Alan Albrecht? Is it Albrecht?
Albrecht is the name that's sticking in my head, but maybe I'm wrong.
It could be Albrecht. Let's call him Albrecht. They drive off together, but then he finds out that Albrecht is this eraser. Oh, yeah, you're right. No, this totally, you're right. They get to the bridge, and Albrecht throws the car keys off the bridge, and Cyprian's like, no, we got to get there. I got to stop this from happening. I got to help. And Albrecht is all like, no, we are observers. It doesn't matter what the outcome is here, which is funny. Like, he's clearly listening to Cortland and doing his bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And then saying the other thing.
Right.
Shady business.
And his skill is pretty, I mean, this is the person that wiped the elevator.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's clearly been in cahoots with Cortland this whole time. And Cortland has been the person basically manipulating a lot of this situation to bring everything that's been happening to Rowan. And I think it's pretty easy to see that what happened to Deirdre is related to Cortland. To Cortland somehow bringing this all to come to pass. And they talk about the prophecy. And so we find out more about that in the next episode.
Yep.
But Albrecht mentions it, like, that this prophecy, this thing is meant to happen. That Rowan is the brain, whatever this is. And it has something to do with the fact that she's pregnant. So then it's into the next episode. And
this begins with some drone shots of Keith running through a swamp.
Yep.
And Rowan sort of stumbling after him. Lasher appears to her, which just seems like a big deal. But yeah, so they've made this kind of jump from the end of last episode where she's screaming the prayer. So suddenly she's out in the swamp running after Keith, and Lasher just appears to her and he's like, look, you called me for a reason. Let me go do this thing. Let me go take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes into what I call her warg state, kind of like a Game of Thrones thing where her eyes go white and she's looking through his eyes. And he finds Keith, and Keith is hiding in a little shack, and then it's on fire.
Yep.
And Rowan's like, do it.
And he lights it up.
We're seeing a little bit more of a bloodthirsty side of Rowan. We already knew that she was I couldn't possibly kill person. And now she's just kind of like, kill. None of the excuses. She's ready to go.
Well, and not just using her own powers, but now she's actually enlisting Lasher, which is another new piece here.
That is new and different.
And then she's totally all in.
She appears to be, well, she gets even more all in as the episode goes on.
Literally.
That was the cold open, if you will. Then we roll credits, and then it's Cortland and Josephine getting off the phone, like, Tessa's dead. So are everybody else, all the kidnappers. Where's Rowan? And Jojo is like, why are you so obsessed with her? And Cortland is just icing her out.
Yep.
I sent her out, not interested in his daughter's opinions or interest or like curiosity. She's like, I've done all these kinds of things that didn't help me personally, but were for you and for the family. Why can't you meet me halfway? He's like, I don't care. I'm Cortland.
Yep. Well, and I think she also feels like she did some bad things on his behalf because he seemed to think that, or he implied that it was for the greater good of the family. And so JoJo's not very happy with her dad right now.
No, and she, well, and she's then, only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse.
Going to get worse.
Because Cyprian discovers, he touches Albrecht and then figures out that he is the eraser. And then he starts asking him a bunch of questions like, so you erased the elevator, which means that you covered for Cortland to kill Deirdre. And don't erase me, I'm the daddy. Those are the broad strokes of that conversation. And then he drives off with one of Albrecht's men, bodyguards, to go and steal the baby. Like, that's kind of what he persuades Albrecht is the right answer. Like, hey, you know how you said we were just observers? What if, hear me out here, I go steal the baby?
Yep.
I mean, I'm confused. There I'm like, Talamasca observes what now? Stealing babies?
Yeah.
And also Cyprian. Yeah. Like, this does make the end of this episode kind of difficult for me, because I'm like, well, Cyprian was this like super sympathetic character, always in Rowan's corner. And now clearly there feels like there's other stuff going on.
Right. And it's hard to, I mean, like, he doesn't fully understand Lash or what's going on in this whole situation, but I don't know. Nobody knows his intentions. I don't think he's on the side of Albrecht, but he does seem like he's on the side of Talamasca or something. I think he's worried about Rowan, but I don't know what the end game is here.
Yeah. He's doing is out of concern for Rowan.
Yeah.
Like, cause he knows that the baby is Lasher, and so he wants to get baby Lasher away from her.
Yeah, maybe. Hard to know, but I think he definitely knows that there's something like really disturbing and strange happening. And clearly there is, as we see. She gets, you know, she's in this sort of like fugue state on the ground, and
for most of this episode, she doesn't wake up until like the very end of the episode.
Yeah, most of this is really disturbing, quite frankly. She is in this sort of like memory space similar to where Sip was before with Lasher, going kind of through this sort of learning process that Suzanne had left for her, and it all talks about how she's like the door or the 13th witch, and it doesn't take too much to figure out what that might mean, given that the baby is coming, and she gets really intimate with Lasher. And then suddenly he disappears, and she's got to find her way out of this weird maze of this mental state where it's like sort of stills of her different ancestors are there talking about this, you know, this imminent thing that's happening.
We only get to see four, five different dioramas out of 13, which I was a little bit bummed about. Yeah, and two of them are like her mom and her grandmother. I would have preferred to see some of the way back.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, so she's kind of figuring her way out of this like dreamscape with very little information. And, you know, this was one of the things in sort of storytelling I just feel like wasn't as helpful as other things could have been. Like, I would have preferred to see other people, if they were going to do this, you want to see a little bit more of the history, like how sort of fraught this whole thing was and way back. And I don't know that they did a good job at showing all these bloodlines and the manipulation that may have happened. And I don't know how you do that. So maybe that's where they ran into issues, but
yeah, maybe. It is kind of cool that he shows her, or she learns how to heal. She can she heals her bullet wound, the cut on her hand from the scrying ceremony. She can make fire appear in her palm, and he's like, you can do all these things and more, and I'm going to give you all the powers of all the things that I can do, and you're great, right, and everything's going to be great. And then he's like, I gotta go meet you at the witching hour. And then it gets really creepy.
It gets really creepy. And she's got an incredibly fast gestation period.
Yes, in hours rather than months, which Dolly Jean explains.
Right. And additionally, her body in the meantime in real life is being dragged around by Cortland. And it's really disturbing that she's just like completely in his power and being like taken to a tomb and thrown in there, and
he dresses her really, too. He puts her in some sort of garb.
Really, really upsetting, especially given what you know that he did to her mother. And
that's another like major element of this episode is Cyprian now shows up at Cortland's house, and JoJo lets him in. She leaves him alone in Cortland's office, and he goes around touching all the things, including a pair of shears that are Suzanne's. I was like, damn, you have some 1,000-year-old shears sitting on your desk. That's pretty cool. But I liked that, where you got to have a little glimpse of, I don't know, the ancient timey witches through Sip's eyes. And then, of course, he's getting all this extra context that he breaks down for JoJo. And he's like, so, your dad killed Patrick. Also, he's, and Rowan is your sister cousin.
JoJo is not excited about this news. Understandably so.
She's not excited about this news. But then Cyprian's like, I gotta go. I think, like, I don't remember how that scene ends, but I feel like he leaves and it's not with JoJo.
Right. And I don't know what he thinks he's gonna do.
Oh, they do go there together. They go to the First Street house for some reason.
Yeah.
Because they go, they go together to the First Street house and find the old doll.
Right.
That's so that he can learn what is the prophecy? What does it mean? And so he sees the blonde, I don't know which this is, but he sees the old timey blonde lady wondering about what the prophecy is. And Lasher shows up and tells her, it's like, by the way, I'm going to be 13th Witch is the doorway. I'm coming along. And that's how Cyprian then has the light bulb moment that baby is Lasher, Lasher is baby. How does he know to go to the mausoleum? Is my question.
Know. I think it says something about over their bones.
And over their bones, right. So that he's like, clearly I have to go to the back of the cemetery. Mm-hmm. So they do. Rowan is waking up and her mom is there. Or not her mom. Sorry, Suzanne. Her great, great, great. Great, 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 great. And Suzanne is like, yep, I'm a spirit now, but it's all good because you're going to be so powerful. And I would have killed to have the kind of power that you're going to have. And we have just what I did like about the way this episode and this season ends is there are all these men trying to, including Lasher, trying to influence and manipulate Rowan. You got Cyprian, you got Cortland and Lasher, all of them kind of pulling her in different directions. And by the end, I mean, Lasher's a baby, but maybe not for long because he's already walking. She has turned Cortland into, what was that? Salt? Stone?
A stone, a statue or something.
Because he's like, I'm invincible.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a lame...
Like, yeah, did to my mom, and she she just takes him out because she now has all of Lasher's powers, although it wasn't clear that Lasher had this particular power, so this is weird. Anyway, she takes care of him, and you know he deserves it for so many reasons, but also because he was creepily watching her give labor in a like creepy, like he's been creepy all over the place, but this was so particularly creepy. And you know, his plan is to he keeps telling her to give him to her, like that she does need him or whatever. And I will say the baby morphine thing was incredibly creepy, where he's growing up really fast, and it's really disturbing.
When that happens, doesn't she like drop the baby or give the baby to Suzanne? I'm like, is Suzanne even here? Can she hold a baby?
I don't think Suzanne can.
She does for at least a few minutes. But that was weird. Like, they have Rowan freak out, give the baby away, and run away into the catacombs or something.
Yep.
And then one or two scenes later, baby's crawling toward her. And then she's, like, fighting over the baby with Cortland to save the baby. It was just a little confusing. Like, why?
Well, it's
what
not
was the change of heart?
Well, I mean, I think that ultimately she thinks Cortland is creepy and doesn't, you know, and also whatever Lasher may be, she doesn't fully know and doesn't want him to be under the power of Cortland. So, you know, maybe, and she seems to be, let's just say, a little out of it, as you might be after being in a dream fugue state for most of the episode and giving birth within, you know, hours
and getting up and running around. Yeah.
And then the baby's getting up and running around. So,
So is the lady who just gave birth.
Yeah. Like, wild. So there's a lot going on for Rowan here, a lot to take in, a lot for her to process. So you can, you know, understand that she might not necessarily be fully grounded.
A few minutes to run around.
And then, you know, she immediately comes out and Sip's trying to get the baby from her. And again, I think he's worried about her, but basically he's doing almost exactly what Cortland was just trying to do. And she does not know his motives, and she, like, he's lying to her, which he should know better. But she's just sort of like, all right, you know what? I'm done with all of you. I'm going to walk away with my demon baby.
I'm going to make lightning strike all around. Lightning. Super cool. And she's so powerful. And she seems happy. So I'm happy for her. However, she's choosing Lasher over her father, uncle, and her, you know, baby daddy, boyfriend.
Yeah.
Also, maybe Lasher is his own father. I'm not sure that Cyprian is actually the father.
Yeah, it's all very confusing. And again, look, the books are kind of confusing too. So yes,
this is a lot
to pack in, and I think that the content here is really hard to put into like a story plot line. I think that's why they added a couple of different things in here, in part to get other characters involved, but also to somehow like tease us out a little bit. She's definitely fully powerful because she's got all of Lasher's powers and all of that jazz. But it's, you know, that's kind of where they leave it, though. She's just sort of walking off with the lightning all around with the baby on her hip.
Yeah. The other thing that I think we have not mentioned was Odette started shaking some bushes at the Talamasca. Like, where's my brother? He didn't come to the birth of the child that I was, a surrogate for. I'm like, why is this surprising? Cyprian is always at work and never where he's supposed to be. But she shakes the trees enough that they send Arjuna and Albrecht the Eraser to erase her. And then at the end of that scene of her getting erased and Arjuna being like, well, I guess you're going to erase me next. And he's like, thank you for understanding. I thought that was funny. Also, but at the end of that scene, though, he's like, is she lactating? Bring her with. We're going to need her.
Yeah, creepy.
Very creepy. Doesn't seem like something that she would agree to. But
I also, again, Odette, while she's worried about Sip, he's been pretty clear about the danger, even if he can't tell her everything. I don't know that she would have been so quick or even, I don't know, maybe she would have been, but like, I just don't know that she would have been as... I don't know. She's not very discreet in terms of her inquiries about him. No. And then she's getting a pretty solid vibe from the woman on the phone, like, to do not go down this path. And she continues to go down it. And I don't think Odette is stupid. And I don't really like how they portray her character in that way. Mm. It didn't feel, again, it felt like they're just trying to sort of cram these characters in places that they can. And obviously there was some plot point here with Odette and the fact that she's a new mother and all that.
Well, at least she's delivered her baby, and so the baby's okay.
Nothing bad happened to the baby, so that was good. We were worried about that.
Yep.
But I just, you know, I think that there's, I mean, look, and then there's disturbing, there are so many disturbing things about this story. It's a gothic, deliberately gothic horror story that Anne Rice put together, and it just, there's so many things to do with it's interesting because some of the most powerful characters are women, but then you have women under power of people in a really disturbing way. And so the fact that Odette has now had her memories taken away forcefully, that she has no real memory of what's happening. She's now maybe being taken from her baby and being forced into something disturbing.
Well, she doesn't have a baby. Like, she gave birth, but it was a surrogate. So I'm sure.
True. But like, she's not like, I don't know.
She certainly has no agency here. And
she has no agency. Yes. And it's, to me, this is really disturbing.
I was super concerned about a baby also. I was like, don't make her forget to, you know, feed her child. But no, the child is gone. The child has been given to the parents, like, who will raise the child.
Oh, we don't know. Maybe she was supposed to hang out for a minute. We don't know that. Maybe. But yeah. all it is, it's, but just the fact that there's this really disturbing, dark thing that she's somehow going to be put into this, into this service for, like, I don't know, lasher feeding is really,
it's funny that that's like one of the most disturbing things that happens in this episode.
Well, I mean, it's that and like everything that happens to Rowan. So there's just a lot of themes here that are, to me, I find just give me the willies.
I kind of want a scene also with Rowan coming back into like Alicia's drawing room with all the Mayfair ladies and them having to be like, my lady, bowing and scraping a little bit after being such dicks to her.
And I mean, what I really want to see is her just taking everybody down, including Lasher, because basically she's being put into service against her will, and it's a very upsetting thing. And I would, like, admittedly, I was disturbed by this in the books as well. Like, there's a lot to do with Rowan that is really just incredibly disturbing. And this has been a theme, you know, throughout this series. And I think, you know, I mean, this has been renewed for another season, so I guess we'll see what happens to baby Lasher when he grows up.
I feel like he'll be a teenager the next time we see him, but yeah.
I mean, at least in the books, he grows up really quickly.
I have a weird memory of him being born as a super tall baby.
Yes, he was basically almost like fully adult within like minutes or hours of him being born. Yeah. So the whole thing with her walking away with the baby is unrealistic, or at least as far, but maybe they slowed down his growth thing. He's not just growing really quickly. He's sentient. Like, he is fully aware of everything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of creepy. We'll have to see what happens in the next thing, but like the whole idea is that he's supposed to like propagate this new species that is somehow genetically defined by the Mayfair family, or this is like the whole point. And like, it's, we'll see what they do, I guess, in the next season. But I think I would like to see some cleaner storylines. That's the disappointing thing for me, is that I really like a lot of these actors. I think they're great, but I just think that some of the storyline could have used some editing or some cleaning up.
They tried to fit a whole novel in 8 episodes. You know, that's not easy.
And it was a big, like in-depth novel with multiple timelines and things like that. So I think that's really hard to do. And I do think that they made a grand try at doing it, but it just wasn't, and sort of the cooler things like the power of the women and things like that, I just don't feel like they raised it enough to the level that I would have wanted to see. But maybe they'll do more of that in the next one.
It just, I guess these last two felt a little shabby, but there was still really cool stuff that happened in them. I want to come back and see what's going on next. And I think it's a first season of a show. It's tough. It's complicated subject matter. So I give them the grace to come back and do another season, and we'll see how it ends at that point. But speaking of things ending, I think we've come to the end of Mayfair Witches season one. And
which means that we're on to talk about something I'm really excited to talk about with you.
Oh, Day Zero, the Filipino MMA movie.
No, the Silo series.
You want to watch Silo? Okay. So then,
oh wait, you've already watched it, and now you sound like you're judgy about it.
Ooh. No, not at all. Not at all. My honest concern is because they're coming out once a week. I feel like we could do two a week up to a point, and then we'll be like doing one a week for a couple of weeks, and then Dead Isle will have been out for a while. But that's good too, because they'll be stockpiling up, and we can do those two at a time too. So it'll all work out.
Then that's fine.
Yeah, so let's talk about Silo. Let's go down 144 floors into the Silo and see what rises to the surface. Yeah, super exciting. So join us again next time on Reanimated. We're going to talk about Silo, which is, I think I can say, 100% zombie-free. But that doesn't matter. It's really cool. And HA and I both like dystopian futurescapes.
We'll make it work.
Exactly. So let us know if you read The Witching Hour and saw this show and what you felt like, if you felt like the show did the book justice, or if you were fresh to the Caesar, the series and liked it or disliked it. If you were just transfixed by the ethereal beauty of Alexandra Daddario, or Harry Hamlin, or whoever you're into, I don't know your life. Let us know. Yippers. So get at us on reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at reanimatedpcast, and you can listen and download all of our episodes on Podbean at reanimated.podbean.com.
Great. And until next time, ciao.
Alrighty, toodaloo.